sexual temptation and sexual sin are prevalent in our culture today and difficult patterns to break. Jay Stringer has some thoughts about why that is.
Most of us would say, I want to be done with this area of sexual brokenness. But until you recognize what would you do in difficult terrain without your most dependable getaway car, sorry, you're going to keep remaining in those really pernicious cycles. And so that, to me, is so much of the feedback of what our sexual brokenness is trying to teach us, is that we really need to be able to develop new ways to handle our anxiety, to work through marital conflict, to pursue some of the deeper things within us.
This is Family Life Today. Our hosts are Dave and Ann Wilson. I'm Bob Lapine. Getting to the root of stubborn, persistent sin patterns in our lives, including issues of sexual brokenness, can be challenging. But when we get there, there's healing available too. We'll talk more about that today. Stay with us. And welcome to Family Life Today. Thanks for joining us. You know, I've had many occasions, you have as well, Dave, at a Weekend to Remember marriage getaway to just address briefly with men the issue of lust and how lust is shown up in their lives and what they do about it. And what you find when you talk with guys about this is that guys will often own, yeah, this is an issue, and yeah, I'd like to get rid of it, but here's what they say. I've tried. I've prayed. It just doesn't go away.
Yeah, and they'll say, I've seen victory for a while. Mm-hmm. Could be a day, a week, a month, 6 months, and then I fall. And then I spin back in.
And I think I deal with a lot of women that don't know how to handle their husband's problem that they uncovered. Mm-hmm. But now I feel like more and more women are saying, I have an issue as well.
Right.
And I don't know how to handle it.
I would even add this, because Ann and I, when we speak at the Weekend to Remember, we'll do a session or two on sexual intimacy in marriage. And then they line up, the couples.
Yeah.
Initially, we thought, oh, they're going to talk about how God meets them in this area. And no, it's pain. It's confusion. It's hurt.
Shame.
It's 90% that. They don't come up and say, man, our sex life's great. They go, man, we're struggling in this area. And porn and lust and all that's a big part of it.
And I'm finding couples who, Christian couples, trying to address this issue by normalizing the behavior.
Right.
They're saying, so it's okay since we're married for us to lust together as a part of how we engage one another in intimacy. We've got Jay Stringer joining us again today. Jay has written on this, done research on this subject. He's a therapist and an author. He's written a book called Unwanted. Jay is married to his wife, Heather. Got two kids, lives in the Seattle area. Jay, welcome back.
Thank you for having me back.
And this is a part of what you do clinically, working with people who are battling lust and trying to understand, why am I battling it, and is there a strategy for dealing with it? But you've talked with people who, as Dave said, have victory over the issue for a season, and then all of a sudden something happens. They're on a business trip that's been 3 months. They slip and fall, and now they feel like, I can never be free of this. And you did research with 3,800 men and women on this subject. You found in the research that the reoccurrence, the relapses, that's pretty common, right?
They are, yep. So most of the current research out there would basically, they tell us that, you know, these recurrences are pretty common. We know that 57% of our pastors, 64% of our youth pastors are struggling with this.
Hang on.
Wow.
Say that again.
57% of our pastors are either struggling or have struggled with it. And about 67% of our youth pastors are struggling or have struggled, likely higher.
Wow.
Yeah, because they're probably not revealing.
Yeah. And so I really wanted to get a sense of what is the why that's actually playing out here. And to me, this is one of the most faithful approaches to Scripture that we can have, is that especially in the book of Genesis, when God approaches people who are in difficult places, God comes to Adam and says, where are you? What have you done? It's not dart your eyes from that next piece of fruit that might tempt you. To Jacob, who's been struggling his whole life with identity, God says, what is your name? And to Hagar, who's just been immensely traumatized by the first family of the faith, the angel of the Lord appears to her saying the two best questions that I think any of us could ask one another, which is, where do you come from and where are you going? And so to me, this is what we need to begin to kind of change within our families, within our church systems, is how do we allow sexual brokenness to be one of the primary stages through which the work of redemption plays out in our lives? If we can actually begin to be honest of saying, there is something about my heart that is able to be seduced every 6 months, or why is it that, you know, whenever I try and make a bid for intimacy to my wife, why is it then that I feel so drawn into pornography? And so part of what my research found, and definitely work with clients, is that it's not random. And so the implication is if you want to find freedom today, you need to identify and transform the unique reasons that bring you to it in the first place. And so one of the key findings for men about why they continued to go back to pornography in particular was that a lack of purpose in a man's life led him to increase his involvement with pornography by a factor of 7. So men without a clear sense of purpose increase their involvement 7-fold. And so this is really, really significant of a finding, and it makes me think about Genesis 3, that the curse for a man is going to be basically thorns and thistles, that so much of what people are going through in life is someone else is getting that promotion that I thought I deserved. Or I try and make some movement within my marriage, but then, you know, it just goes back to a place of futility and emptiness. And one of the reasons why pornography appeals to these type of men is that you can get exactly what you want when you want it in the world of the internet, and nothing else actually gives you that opportunity.
You know, it's interesting when you said the thing about men with purpose. I think you wrote about this in your book, but here's where I went immediately. David, King David, 2 Samuel 11, you know, the precursor to his sin of sexual sin with Bathsheba. What's he doing?
Everybody's out to battle and he's home.
I mean, there it is. In the spring of the year, in a time when kings go out to battle, David sent Joab and his servants and he stayed home and he has no purpose. I mean, he does, but he should be somewhere else. And I've always said to men, you're going to get in trouble when you're not doing what you're supposed to be doing. You know, when you're not where you should be. Again, I never connected it to the purpose part that you get at, which is the deeper issue. But I've always said, be very careful with your leisure time. Because in some ways, it's purposeless time. And we live in a world where there it is, boom. But we think it's just, oh, I got a phone and I can access it. That's the issue. No, you're saying it's a lot deeper.
Yes. So well said. A couple years ago, my wife and I were moving from one rental property to another rental property about a mile apart. And we had packed up our U-Haul. And if you know those scenes, it's like, you know, twilight.
We've done it many times. Yeah.
My shirt is just drenched. And we realized that we have so much of just kind of baby gear, a bassinet, a baby stroller down in the basement. And there's no room left in the U-Haul. I'm wiped. And so I told my wife, Heather, I'll just come back in a couple days and pick this stuff up. We've got some time. Well, 3 days later, I go back to this house and I get this really ominous feeling come over me. And I look up and there is a man inside our old rental house peering behind the curtain that basically he mouths some very unkind words to me to basically tell me to back off. And it's another one of those split second decisions of I either confront this guy, get him out, or I just kind of say, these baby things are bound to goodwill anyway. I'm going to leave. So I chose wisdom and walked away. But what struck me was that this man that was in our old house was actually a squatter. And he knew within 3 days that there was nobody home. And so when we look at not just things like pornography, but the reality that all of us are watching 4.5 hours of television a day, we're exposed to over 11 hours of media. If we don't know who we are and we don't know what we want out of this life, there are going to be squatters that begin to show up in our life. And so that's one of those things with regard to pornography is definitely a moral issue. But beneath that is definitely this issue of if you don't know who you are, you don't know how to actually pursue the desires that God has given to you, squatters are going to show up. And so if you want freedom, you really need to begin to identify what are the squatters that I've allowed in my life and how do I take over authority for my life in order for there to be change.
How does that happen for a typical man or woman who's probably not going to come sit in your office and ask for therapy? So they're out there not knowing who they are, just trying to work through this lust struggle on their own. What would you say? How's the church, how does the community help them? How do they get help if they're not going to go get real therapy?
One of my favorite authors is a woman by the name of Annie Dillard, and she has this line that says, "I never knew I was a bell until the moment I was lifted up and struck." And so those are those moments where I would really invite people to go back to, when in my life did I actually feel alive? When did something in me say, that's a type of beauty, that's a type of story that I want to intimately be involved in? And so what I would invite people into is not just to accountability about the bad things that you've done or some of the, you know, failures that you've chosen. When you meet with people, to really say, like, is your heart alive? And if it's not, how do we kind of allow community and just our sense of friendship with one another to really be pushing one another on to things like beauty, things like meaning and purpose in our lives?
And what would you say, you know, I'm going back to that statistic about Christian workers and pastors with a high percentage indulging in porn and different things.
That just scared a lot of people, didn't it?
Yeah. I mean, I'm sitting there thinking, they know better. We know better. We know Christ. We know the richness of an intimate relationship with him. And yet, according to your stats, there's men and women that are hiding something and they're going somewhere else that they know better.
Yeah.
Why would they go there?
Yeah. So one of the things about just maturity in general in life is that we are going to have to confront some really difficult emotions and really difficult relational dynamics in our marriage and in our work life. And I think part of what happens here is that if the only thing that we know how to do when we are in the midst of kind of stress, anxiety, or marital conflict is to actually go to something that we outsource the solution to that anxiety, to that purposelessness, to pornography, that's where we're going to keep going back to time and time again. And so that's a really, really significant thing for us to ask ourselves is most of us would say, I want to be done with this area of sexual brokenness. But until you recognize what would you do with in difficult terrain without your most dependable getaway car, sorry, you're going to keep remaining in those kind of really pernicious cycles. And so that, to me, is so much of the feedback of what our sexual brokenness is trying to teach us, is that we really need to be able to develop new ways to handle our anxiety, to work through marital conflict, to pursue some of the deeper things within us.
Well, it's funny. I remember when Dave and I were in seminary, we were fairly new in our faith. Maybe 5 years in walking with Jesus. And part of our segment of training was taking classes on learning how to counsel people, which is always dangerous because then you're basically going into your own issues. And as we were there, my abuse came up, my sexual abuse. And here I was doing ministry, going about it, like keeping my eyes on Jesus, not realizing that this past was really affecting my present. And as I began talking about it, it all came flooding out of the pain, the rejection. And I bet I cried every single night for a month. And I'm so thankful that that came about, that reflection of the past and how it is affecting me now. And I think many people never go back there. I'm not sure I ever would have had it not been for that class.
Yes.
And so even asking each other that question, tell me your story. Tell me the things that have brought you incredible joy and tell me the things that have brought you to the deepest parts of anguish and pain in your life. That right there, that makes you panic a little bit like you want to hide. But from your spouse, it's becoming naked and unashamed of allowing your spouse to see you, to know you, and to experience your own pain. Dave being with me in those years, those months, really helped me, and it was really good for him to read Dan Allender's book, The Wounded Heart, because I had read it, but until he read it, it was the first time you really understood what I was carrying.
So beautifully said. Yeah. Hmm. One of the things that I needed to recognize in my own journey towards wholeness was one of the things that we all know about sexual brokenness is that after we pursue it, part of the feedback loop that we get is, I don't feel great. I don't feel like I'm a person of integrity anymore. I feel shame. I feel some level of repulsion. And so that became, again, in my own story, to go back to some of those categories of where did I really get used to feeling really terrible about who I was and what I was going through. And this is when a lot of the stories around when I was in middle school, my nickname was Donut. I was about, you know, 50 pounds overweight or so. Wow. And brought this jelly donut into the bus stop and it drizzled all over my shirt. And this is the era of Pillsbury Doughboy. And wow. I remember a kid in my class started doing, just took his finger and poked my stomach and said, "Oh." And so part of what happened in some of my initial bullying and trauma was that I began to have a view of myself as unwanted, that there was something about me that was really disgusting, that there was something about me really broken. And lo and behold, part of what we pursue in our sexual brokenness is actually to reinforce those core beliefs that we hold about ourselves. And that's really the task of healing, is to say, what is it about this sexual brokenness that I've become so accustomed to feeling terrible about myself? Mm-hmm. And if we can begin to kind of go back to say, I know that that's not the life that God has for me. And so I need to begin to heal not just my sexual brokenness, but all areas of my life that reinforce this view of myself that I am not beloved, mm-hmm. that I need to be ashamed of who I am.
You know, what you're talking about is, again, getting to the root of this issue. I think most people, including the Christian workers and the statistics we talked about here, are not thinking, how do I deal with the root of this? They're thinking, how do I manage this so that it stays
hidden?
Yeah. It stays manageable and nobody knows it's going on, but it's there if I need it. I'm thinking of the guy who is driving along listening to this program and he's going, I don't want to go back and get to the root. I just want to be able to kind of keep this manageable. What would you say to him?
Yeah. So I think we have to underscore again this point that like our sexual brokenness is not all about lust. Some of the other tributaries that feed our sexual brokenness involve anger. And so one of the classic examples in my own practice is that a man will come in and just say, you know, I felt really rejected. I made this bid for intimacy with my spouse. She said no. And then, you know, I found myself down on the couch, down the basement, and I started looking at some pornography site. And so he will come in, and what he wants me to kind of catch him in is like, look at my lust problem. But part of my response back to him is, how did you feel after your bid for intimacy was declined? And part of what he might say is, well, I was a little bit frustrated. And I say, well, tell me about like a little bit frustrated. And he's like, well, a huge fight began to ensue, because that was a lot of their marital dynamic, was that if he would pursue bids for intimacy and his wife would turn him down, he would feel anger very, very fast. And so part of what we had to do is, you've tried your whole life to have integrity with your lust, but you've never once had integrity with your anger. And so that is often a very significant change for people, is when they look at some of the times that I'm most drawn into pornography or wanting to have an affair are actually times when I'm very angry with my spouse, or I'm very angry with where my life currently is. And so that just becomes this, again, I think part of God's knock on the door of our heart is to say, why are you so angry? Well, what this man eventually did was he went back to his wife and said, you've known about my struggles with porn. But what you don't know is that I haven't had integrity with my own anger. And so he went back to his wife and just said, when I make a bid for intimacy, what do you feel? And part of her response was, this is one of the only places that you pursue me. I have had really significant steps in my own career that I've taken. You have not asked me one question about these things. And so what she opened up about was, I don't really feel free to say yes to sex because the meaning of the sex that we are having together is basically to abate or to diminish your anger. And that's not the type of sex life that I want to have with you. Mm-hmm. And so part of what they started working through within a couple months was, how does he begin to pursue her with more integrity about what's going on in her life? And in the moments where she didn't feel free to say no, he said, okay, like I'm going to stay in this and I'm going to deal with my disappointment. I'm going to read a book, but you have my commitment that I'm not going to outsource my anger to sexual brokenness and into pornography. And that really began to change his whole trajectory in life, because he was always seeing it as this lonely, rejected man rather than recognizing the power that he actually had to change his marriage.
And the cool thing about that is when you sort of trace back to the root with your spouse and get to the real heart of what she's feeling, what he's feeling, is if you can negotiate through that, you get to the most beautiful, intimate relationship that's on the other side of that. You don't get there without it. Not just I get control of my lust, but the beauty of the relationship, and including sexually with your spouse, gets to a whole other level, right? Because you're getting at her heart, your heart, and then those two hearts are coming together.
Yeah, there's a vulnerability of your souls and knowing each other, which is beautiful. I'm wondering, as I'm talking to more and more women over the years, the rate of women using pornography seems to be really rising. Is that true? And if so, why do you think?
Most of the studies that I've seen say about 30% of all pornography users are now women. So we are definitely seeing a rapid increase in female involvement with pornography. Part of what we know is that the average age of initial exposure is somewhere in the range of about 9 years old for most of us. And so when we have these smartphones, when we have all these devices, again, what's going through the internet onto our screens are very, I mean, it's like basically having, as one person said, the red light district in your own phone. Mm. And so what's happening to a lot of us is that, you know, if former generations had to work really, really hard to find pornography, we have to work really, really hard to avoid it. Mm. And so if some of your first sexual experiences are, here's a sext or here is hardcore pornography, that's going to actually set a sexual template for you that you don't feel fully alive unless you're remixing some of those original sexual experiences. So one of my female clients that I worked with, she, you know, changed some of the story, but she was a nanny for a family while she was in college. And what she didn't realize was that this family actually had a nanny cam installed in the bedroom, and they saw her rooting through the bedroom dresser and the side tables. And they confronted her about it later on that night, and she was fired. And what she told me was that I was really relieved that they thought I was just trying to steal valuables, but in reality, I was actually looking for sexually explicit material. Mm. And so what I began to kind of work with her back is, why were you drawn to try and find pornography in a random family home? And as we trace that story back, it was actually her grandparents' house where she first found pornography. And part of the story with her was that during the summers, her and her two siblings would go to their grandparents' place. And there was at certain points where the grandfather would say, you know, boys, I want you guys to go mow the lawn, rake the leaves. But she was assigned cleaning the guest bedrooms and the guest bathroom. And her grandfather was really specific about making sure that she would use his glass cleaner on the guest bathroom windows. And he told her where to find it. And the first time that she went into the guest bathroom to clean it, she found his porn stash underneath the sink right next to the glass cleaner. And so her whole life had just kind of seen it as, you know, I'm just such a sexually broken girl and woman that I was even drawn to these images, and I don't know why I'm pursuing these things. But in reality, it was her grandfather that set her up to find those things. And so throughout her adolescence, that's the images that she kept going back to. And so, again, that's the point for us to say, was your first exposure to pornography something that you actually chose, or was it introduced to you? And if you happen to find it underneath a bed or in a bedside table, I'm sorry, but your family set up, or your extended family or your neighbor set up the very, very high probability that you were going to find it.
So then do you just blame them?
No, but it is about studying the conditions. Like for her, she wanted to kind of see herself as, you know, there's something deeply broken about my sexuality. And again, part of the tears for her that came was, I've never had a choice within my sexual story. And so if I'm going to reclaim authority, part of what God is inviting me into isn't just to say no, but it's to stand against some type of perversion in my life.
Jay, you mentioned anger being a trigger for one person. I think it is for a lot of people. I remember a friend of mine who said, as he was dealing with addiction to alcohol, he said he learned at AA the HALT principle. He said, you tend to be more tempted when you are hungry or angry or lonely or tired. And I've come back to that many times because I've found I am more vulnerable to whatever sin pattern there may be in my life if I'm hungry or angry or lonely or tired. And I'm thinking about those triggers and going, it's helpful to know what the triggers are, but it's only helpful from a management perspective. It's going to help me manage the temptation, but it's not going to get to the root, is it?
Yes. And I think part of what we miss out is that part of the reason why we're pursuing sexual brokenness is actually to make us feel worse about ourselves, which is one of those paradoxical things, is why, again, as we've been talking about, why do you need that type of judgment in your life? And so part of what we're going to have to confront within ourselves is when we are hungry, when we're angry, when we're tired, when we're stressed, is why do we allow our hearts to be sabotaged by something that really doesn't bear goodness or glory? And so I think that that's part of the question back to us, is to say, I know that I'm hungry. I know that I'm lonely. I'm tired. And so what if tonight, instead of pursuing something that's actually going to make me feel worse about myself, I actually play some of my favorite music that I know actually calms me? And so this is the language of Psalm 131, like a weaned child is my soul within me. And so I think that that's part of the point, is even if you identify with having a broken family of origin story or not, part of the question that sexual brokenness answers for us is there's always something available to us that can alter our moods and to help us. But part of maturity is to go back to say, I need care right now. I don't need more judgment in my life. I don't need something that I know is going to cause relational division. I want goodness and beauty for my life tonight.
Yeah. And I have to think there are people who are listening today who go, that's what I want. And I've tried to pursue it, and I haven't known how. And maybe the conversation today has opened some new ways of thinking, some new understanding. To go deeper, to get a copy of Jay's book and go through it as a couple.
I really think just asking each other some questions really leads to this great depth and intimacy of, honey, tell me your story. Could be a great place to start, because that opens your life and to be really honest about your story.
Like, tell me the parts of your story you've been afraid to tell me in the past.
Exactly.
But here's, if you're going to do that, there has to be enough trust in the relationship that, and I'm not going to
explode.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Or shame.
Yes.
Or any of those things.
And I would add, I could say this to men and women. I'm thinking men, but it would be have the courage to go there. Because I've been afraid to go there at times. You know, I'd just rather live in superficial intimacy, you know.
This is a ongoing thing with us. I want to go so deep with Dave, and he's like, let's not.
Yeah. And so I, you know, I'm saying to myself in the mirror, but every listener out there, tonight's the night. Mm-hmm. Today's the day. what if you took a little baby step with your spouse or even with yourself to say, I want to go deeper. I want to ask the harder questions and start that journey. Because what we've heard so far is, man, you go into that journey, it's going to lead you to the light. Mm-hmm. And as we continue to talk, that's where I want to end. Right. Like, what's that look like?
Well, and again, we've got copies of Jay's book, Unwanted, How Sexual Brokenness Reveals Our Way to Healing, that'll help answer some of those questions. You can order your copy at familylifetoday.com or you can call 1-800-FL-TODAY. Again, the title of the book is Unwanted, How Sexual Brokenness Reveals Our Way to Healing by Jay Stringer, our guest today. Order online at familylifetoday.com or order when you call 1-800-358-6329. That's 1-800-F as in family, L as in life, and then the word today. You know, reflecting back on our conversation, I think central to everything we've talked about today is being courageous. The whole idea of acting not in fear, but acting and doing what we know we ought to do. And David Robbins, who's the president of Family Life, is with us again today. You heard that as well, didn't you?
Yeah, I think all of us really are convinced that healing can come and can happen if we are courageous to really step into some of the types of things we were talking about today. But I think we're also convinced about how terrifying it is to really go there sometimes. And it requires courage, indeed. And Joshua 1:9 is often quoted when talking about courage, and that's where God says, be strong and courageous. But the reason Joshua could be strong and courageous is found in the rest of the verse, that for the Lord your God is with you wherever you go. God's leading presence is the thing that provides us courage to be able to go and take some risk into these hard places. And I would just ask listeners, as you're listening today, is there something that occurred that you said, that's for me? Hmm. I need to step into that with some courage. Because here's the thing. In Christ, God is with you. You probably aren't going to know how it all works out, but if he is leading, follow him. He will provide as you are courageous.
Yeah, and we have both heard over and over again that courage is not the absence of fear. It's doing your duty in the face of fear, right?
That's right.
That's a good definition. Thank you, David. You know, we hope and trust that these kinds of conversations are helpful. And in fact, we hear from enough Family Life Today listeners to know that God uses this program in some pretty significant ways in people's lives. And those of you who help support this ministry, you make all of that possible. Your financial support of Family Life Today is what keeps us on the air in your community and in communities all across the country and around the world. So thank you for your ongoing support. If you're a regular Family Life Today listener, can we ask you to consider making a donation during the month of May? We've had some friends who have come along and agreed to match every donation we received this month, dollar for dollar, up to a total of what is now $645,000. That's a big number, and we hope to take full advantage of that matching gift. So we want to ask you to make a donation, knowing that your donation will be matched dollar for dollar. If you become a legacy partner during the month of May and agree to make donations each month for the next 12 months, those donations are going to be matched dollar for dollar as well until the matching fund is depleted. In addition, when you become a legacy partner, we're going to say thank you for your ongoing monthly support by sending you a gift card that will enable you or someone you know to attend an upcoming Weekend to Remember Marriage getaway. The conference registration is paid in full. And that's our way of saying thank you for your ongoing support of this ministry by becoming a monthly legacy partner. You can either make a one-time donation or become a legacy partner on our website at familylifetoday.com or call if you'd like to sign up or make a gift. Call 1-800-FL-TODAY. And again, thank you on behalf of the tens of thousands of listeners each day who are finding help and hope through this program. Thanks for making all of that possible by supporting Family Life Today. And we hope you can join us back tomorrow. Jay Stringer is going to be here for a final day to talk about why sexual sin is such a persistent issue in the lives of so many people and how it's becoming an increasing issue among women. We'll talk more about that tomorrow. I hope you can be with us for that. I want to thank our engineer today, Keith Lynch, along with our entire broadcast production team. On behalf of our hosts, Dave and Ann Wilson, I'm Bob Lapine. We'll see you back next time for another edition of Family Life Today. Family Life Today is a production of Family Life of Little Rock, Arkansas, a Crew ministry. Help for today, hope for tomorrow.